podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Networks on Saturday, May 9th, 2020. This is episode 1693. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of you are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you trust. Well, I'll tell you what I trust, ExpressVPN. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to ExpressVPN.com/TechGuy. And by SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is everything you need in a home security system with its award-winning protection. Go to simplysafe.com/twit to save on home security today. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, the world goes on, and the Tech Guy part of it, we shall continue to talk about high tech. Today, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, as usual, as it has been since 2004. It will continue to be so. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada if you want to talk about high-tech. Well, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Let's talk high-tech. 888-ASK-LEO. There's a website. We put everything there so you don't have to write anything down as you're listening. That's TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. There's also a chat room. If you're looking for a little companionship, yeah, it's, you know, it's text. It's plain old text. You don't have to put on makeup. You don't have to put on pants. You can just hang out at irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. And I mention that because I spent a lot of time on Zoom this week. Did you? Yeah, I think a lot of us are Zooming. I Zoom with my family. I Zoom with colleagues. I Zoom with friends. I even did a college reunion Zoom yesterday. It was fun. But I noticed yesterday was a bad day. How many Zoom calls did I do? 3, I think. Something like 3 or 4 hours sitting at my computer Zooming, video conferencing. It's fatiguing, isn't it? It's harder than doing a radio show. I thought, oh, I should be a pro at this. I do this for a living. But there's something about it. I don't know what it is. Staring at that grid of faces. Isn't it? Is it just me? Are we getting zoomed out? On the one hand, without FaceTime and Duo and Zoom and WhatsApp and all the different ways we can chat with one another, this would be so hard, you know, just sitting at home. Alone, I mean, it'd be tough. I can't complain that we have friends and family, and I can have a college reunion. People I haven't seen in 40 years get together and chat. We had a wonderful time. It was just like those 40 years in between hadn't existed. It was really cool. It's still exhausting. I went to bed, and I just went, oh, that was an exhausting day. You'd almost rather dig ditches, maybe not. Put up fence posts, maybe not. Work in a grocery store, maybe not. You'd almost rather. You almost would. So sometimes technology is a good thing. Sometimes too much. I think that's it, isn't it? Too much tech is a bad thing. Too much streaming media. Too much YouTube. Too much Twitter. Whew, too much Facebook. Oh my. You gotta at some point disconnect and get up and walk around and maybe even go outside. Put your mask on, go outside. Breathe the fresh air. This is, I think, is an important antidote to the silicon buzz that we're all staring at all the time. Just, you know, just relax a little. Take it easy. I could tell you about more conferences that have been canceled. It's kind of funny, actually. There's a running gag every year trying to sucker the noobs that the big hacker convention in Vegas, DEF CON, is canceled. Hoping that, I don't know what, it'll fool people and they won't go. This year it's actually canceled. It's actually canceled. Of course it is. Would it happen in August? It's a really kind of, I've never been, but I have many friends who go, and it's a very cool convention because, well, it's just kind of outrageous, right? And there's all sorts of hacking going on, and you can get hacked too. They have something called the Wall of Sheep. If your system gets hacked, they put your name up on the Wall of Sheep. So most of the people I know who go to DEF CON, and it's Big Brother Black Hat, both put on by the same guy, don't bring anything important. They don't bring their regular laptop. They don't even bring their regular phone. They definitely don't bring an Android device. They just they go the safest way they can because they don't want to end up on the Wall of Sheep.
No.
Yeesh. Other, I guess I'm trying to avoid the COVID news. We get plenty of that all day long. I don't need more of that. But I guess a couple of things worth saying. One, Google has now announced we're not going to make anybody come in to Google to work for the rest of the year. Facebook's done the same thing. You don't have to come back in 2020. That is wild. I mean, this is Mrs. May. It's May, the fifth month of the year. That's seven more months of working at home. And I wonder after a year of working at home, effectively, almost a year of working at home, if people are ever going to go back. Remember when Yahoo had a CEO change a few years back and they brought in Marissa Meyer from Google, very famous Google executive, and they brought her in to transform Yahoo. She failed, incidentally. Spoiler alert. Couldn't do it. Ended up selling the whole thing to Verizon for pennies on the dollar. But going back to when she first took over and there was much hope and excitement, she was going to transform the place. Yahoo, you know, one of the great names of the early days of the internet. What's the first thing she did? She made everybody who was working from home come back. Can't work from home, she said. Not efficient. Not going to work. Not going to do it. Mm-mm. You coming in. We've got a place for you. Here's your badge. Have a seat. And the other thing the Silicon Valley companies do is they don't even give you an office, which means you're all sitting at long tables in wide open spaces. Exactly the worst thing you could be doing, sitting across from your coworkers, talking, eating lunch, spitting, hacking and a hewing, sneezing, coughing. And there you are sitting there exposed all day. It's literally the worst possible scenario for catching a bug. And I don't mean just COVID, any bug, right? That's why whole offices come down. We had that a few months ago here in the Twit Studios, and there's only about 20, 25 of us. It's not a big group, but there was you've had this happen, right? A bug raging. Everybody got it. I didn't. Washed my hands, stayed in my office. Because I have an office. See, I don't have to sit across from people. And I think that's part of the problem. So what's going to happen next year? Companies worry that they can't control. I know. I'm a boss. That you can't control workers at home. I know how bosses think. You think, oh, you know what? He's not working. He's sitting around eating Doritos and watching Cops reruns. He's not working. I bet he hasn't put on a shirt even in weeks. He's not doing anything. We don't like people working from home. There's another reason when you're a tech industry, there is value to the collaboration that happens when you are sitting across from one another. In fact, Steve Jobs, when they first designed the Apple campus way back when, the Circle campus that they're now in, he only had two bathrooms. And his theory was, well, people really need to, I don't know what his theory, he was kind of loopy, but he wanted people to spend time together, not even people who are working on the same project, but more importantly, kind of cross-pollinization within the company of ideas and strategies, and just kind of, he wanted people to be together. And you know that it makes a lot of sense. One of the reasons they say San Francisco became this tech hub some years back was because they were all kind of in the same area, the South Park area, and they were all kind of hanging out, and there was this cross-pollinization. It's not just that all the engineers are there, but that they all have lunch together in different companies, and there's really some value to that. Well, that's gone. Now everybody's at Google's going to be at home in their jammies, eating those fiery hot Cheetos. I don't know. What will happen? What will productivity look like? I think some people prefer it, but you don't have that collegiality, that collaboration. And I don't think Zoom. I'm sorry. After now having spent many days zooming, I don't want to Zoom. Can we not Zoom? I don't want to do phone calls either. You know, I just leave me alone. Leave me alone. I am actually glad that I am closer to retirement age than starting work. Both my kids just got out of college. What are they going to do? They don't know what they're going to do. How do they get a job? I don't know. There's jobs, but maybe not the kind of jobs they want. They don't want to work in an Amazon warehouse. I don't blame them. 8888 Ask Leo. What do you think? Are you zoomed out? And should people work from home? We could talk about anything on your mind. Your tech is my problem. I'm your tech guy. I'm here for you, my friend. 888-827-5536. Website techguylabs.com. And, of course, the chat room. As I mentioned, lots of nice people. They're good people in there on both sides. irc.twit.tv. It's Kimmy Schaffer, our unbreakable phone angel. It's the Schaffer Show. That's if you ever have a radio show, that's what you should call it. It's the Schaffer Show.
You know what's funny is I thought if I ever made it in radio, I would change my name to like an alias.
It's a great name.
Because I thought Schaffer was just too cumbersome.
But it's kind of, when I started in radio many, 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 many years ago, you didn't use your own name. You know, you were Dapper Dave, you know, or whatever.
Well, and the anonymity of it all, too.
Maybe it was anonymity. I think it was also like, I'm Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Johnny Fever. You had to have a name. Dr. Donald T. Rose. When I first started, I had to come up with a name like pretty darn quick. And I came up with such a zinger, such a name, such a peppy name. You'll never forget it. Dave Allen.
Dave Allen. Boring.
Oh, my God. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, I am now my own name.
Yes, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's better these days. We use our own names.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kim, let me think. What would your name be? If you were
You know, at one point, I think I was thinking of like Conway because it just seemed to
Kim
flow.
Conway.
I don't know.
Kimba Conway. How about Kimba Conway? Or Simba Kimba.
Yeah.
Kimba. Oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey,
oh, isn't that hey. Like a white lion or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, maybe I should take a call. What do you think?
Just off the rails. Well, I think Tom in Milwaukee just has like a plethora of questions.
I feel like I'm on a Zoom call with you. This is terrible.
We could do the whole show like this.
So you said your friend heard me say I don't want to Zoom anymore, thought I didn't want to take phone calls. No. I'm still going to do the radio show. That's different. This is easy compared to a Zoom call. Easy. I don't know what about a Zoom call. I think it's the grid. I think it's 20 people looking at you.
There's that, and then what? Every time somebody talks, it kind of mutes out.
Yeah,
that's
you have to have kind of rules about talk. You know, that you need a talking stick.
And watching something. These TV shows use that and do a TV show is. Really
Although I have to say, I've been enjoying the ads. Have you seen? There've been a few Zoom ads,
yes,
like
the insurance one.
Geico's doing it. Flo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy those. I have to say, those are pretty funny. That's an opportunity. And Saturday Night Live has done some fun parodies. Anyway, let me talk to Tom. Nice to see you, Kim. That was it. That was our weekly check-in. That's it. We're done. Hello, Tom. Thank you, Kim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. It's Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hey. Quick two or three questions.
Sure.
started in VHS, then went to Laserdisc, then went to DVD, then went to Blu-ray. So I'm wondering how much better the 4K discs are than the Blu-rays.
Well, they're twice as good. They're four times better. That's a good question. So they do have new discs, new formats called UHD or Ultra High Def, which
right.
is Blu-ray times two in each direction. So twice as high resolution horizontally and vertically, so it's four times the number of pixels. But even more importantly, I think, in the new UHD format is something called High Dynamic Range, HDR. You'll see it abbreviated. And what it is the brightest brights, the difference between the brightest brights and the darkest darks, the difference is larger. So you get much richer blacks, much brighter, almost eye-hurting bright highlights. And the reason you want that is your human eye has this very wide dynamic range. I can't remember what it is, 12 stops or something. And traditional video can't do that. There's something like 7 or 8 stops. So if you can get even a stop or two more, stop is how you measure brightness. If you can get a little bit more, it looks a little more realistic. It's more like, and that's the difference you'll see when you look at a UHD disc. It feels like you're looking at something more real, but you have to have the TV for it. And not just the TV, you have to have everything in the chain has to be 4K for you to see this. And I wish we didn't, 4K and UHD are the same thing, but they're not technically interchangeable, but I'm using them interchangeably. They are the same thing. Now, here's the real problem, Tom.
Right.
You've already been down this road, haven't you? How many times have I bought the Beatles music on vinyl, on cassette, on 8-track, on CD, on digital? We're at finally, I think, the end of the line for what I call physical media, the VHS tapes and the CDs and the DVDs. As we get higher speed internet connections, I think the difference, a true videophile will say, "Oh, Leo, you ignorant fool. Don't you know a UHD disc is there's nothing better?" True, perhaps. But given how easy it is to just stream it in 4K, if you have enough bandwidth, I think that's probably the way we're going to go. I don't think physical media has much of a future anymore.
So related to that, I also have a ton of movies on iTunes.
Yeah, those are 4K. UHD, HDR. The only limitation is in order to get down the pipe, they have to be compressed. You need to have, and on 4K, Netflix says 25 megabits per second. I'd say even a little bit more. But even then, it's not exactly as good as the disc. I think it's fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Property pie. Hello, Scotty Wilconson.
Hello, Leo.
You could weigh in on that topic if you wish as well.
Sure.
The replacement of physical media with streaming. What do we give up? I just feel like...
I think you handled it very, very well.
My issue...
You said basically what I would have said.
I'm thinking back when I had albums, music albums, and if you never, ever have to move and you're never going to die, then having a wall full of LPs is fine. It's cool. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if the minute you have to move them, you go, what have I
done? Oh, man.
You can only put so many in a box before it gets too heavy. Same thing with books. And I love books. I'm probably going to always have a bookshelf with books.
Right.
But I think physical media is just it's so inconvenient compared to digital media.
Well, and even if you don't move, you have to get up, you have to go get the disc, you have to put it in, spin up the drive or the turntable or whatever. And with records, you've got to, keep them real clean and be very careful with handle them very carefully.
That's true, yeah.
There's a lot involved with that, whereas with, online media or even, your local Plex library or whatever, you just grab your smartphone, you say, play this, and boom, it's there. Now, of course, it's more compressed, and that's, you know, for video files. They want the best possible quality. Ultra HD Blu-rays are compressed as well, but not as much.
Right. Well, video is always compressed at least to some because
at least to some degree, right?
It's just too damn big.
Yeah, exactly. And especially UHD.
When they deliver movies digitally to movie theaters, those files are massive.
Massive. They have to basically ship a hard drive, a giant hard, I mean, not physically giant, but capacity giant hard drive to the theater.
Because they can't, you know, it's just too big.
Yeah, exactly. Even those are compressed, not as much.
Yeah, even those are compressed.
They use JPEG 2000, which is still a compression, but...
Yeah.
But you're entirely right that HDR is the most important thing, much more than the increase in number of pixels. But as you said, you need a TV that can do it. You need an AVR, whatever your signal chain consists of. Everything needs to be able to pass that along.
And then there's the other thing. There's a guy suing Amazon because they're using the term buying movies when in fact you aren't buying movies at Amazon, you're buying the right to keep them until such time as Amazon revokes that right. And so this is the other problem with this transition from physical to digital media ownership rights. For instance, if I buy a book, I can hand it down to my kids. They may not want it, but I can give it to them. It's unclear. It's really unclear what happens to my Kindle books.
Yeah, good question. I think Kindle books probably aren't as much of an issue as movies. You know, if you think you bought a movie and you want to hand that down to your kid, that's probably not going to happen.
No, you can't. You'd have to give, what you're handing down is the iTunes account. Son, one day this password will be yours.
By the way, though, one thing I will correct you on is the human eye only has a momentary, instantaneous dynamic range of about 3 stops.
I know, but we dilate. Our pupils dilate. I know.
Right.
It's an apparent. What is the apparent range like?
Well, the absolute range is I don't know, 7 or 8 or maybe even 10 stops.
Not even that big. Okay.
Maybe not even that big.
It's like when you ask photographers or these guys, what's the pixel? How many megapixels does that film have? They say it's not. It's different. It's not the same.
Mm-mm.
I'll tell you what is hip. Hip is Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek and a contributor at TechHive.com. Scott joins us each week at this time to be hip, to be cool, to be our home theater geek. Hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo. I do like to talk about what is hip in the audio video world.
Yeah. So our last call had a great, Tom was really asking important questions.
Mm-hmm.
There's even more, which I didn't get into, ran out of time, but there's the digital ownership issue as well.
Oh, man.
There's a lawsuit going on right now. Some people are mad at Amazon saying you can't use the word bought when I buy a digital movie from you because I'm not owning it. I am only buying the rights to play it until such time as you revoke those rights or I pass away. And this is true with all digital media, music, books, TV shows, and movies. You don't really own those.
Well, you'd have to read the fine print. Is that really true? I don't know.
Yeah, no, and you own a right to them.
Okay.
License to play them. And we know that because
Which specifically they can revoke
it's
if
revocable.
They want to.
We know that because it happens from time to time.
Well, I know that Netflix, for example, takes movies off their site all the time and adds stuff. But I mean, it's stuff.
But you're
bought.
Not buying
really
Netflix.
True?
You're buying.
No. You're buying a subscription.
Even if you buy a movie from iTunes or a book, we've seen, for instance, who was it? Sold a book, 1984, George Orwell's 1984. I think it was on Kindle, and they revoked it. It disappeared from people's Kindles because
really?
There was some sort of rights issue. Yes, ironic. It was 1984.
Yeah,
really. So, you don't – if you read the fine print, and you probably have to look pretty deep, you don't – you have a license to watch it or use it, but it's revocable.
Oh, man.
And
who reads that fine print?
Nobody.
Those things that you click on agree, I mean, they're pages long, and who reads them? Nobody.
And I think it's the case, although I should probably read the fine print, that when you buy a DVD or a UHD disc, or you buy a physical book, mm-hmm. or you buy a physical CD, that's yours. You own it.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't transmit it. You can't give it, but you can give it to somebody. You could sell it to somebody. You can keep it. You can hand it down to your heirs.
And that's one of the reasons I think why physical media sticks around. I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see much more development in physical media. We're not going to get an 8K disc, for example. I don't think we're going to get that. But people like to own things. They like to have the physical thing in their hand. As we were talking offline, you know, physical media has its own problems of you've got to get the disc, you got to find it. Hopefully you've put it on your shelf in a way you can find it.
Good luck finding it. Not even that, finding it in the stores, you know. It's harder and harder.
Too.
Plus, aren't movie companies, I think they're not putting everything on UHD anymore. Are they?
Used to be they put everything
on DVD.
Well, true.
Although back catalog, they never did that with. Mm. But I wonder, I don't think there's a UHD disc of every movie that comes out. Is there?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to do some research on that. Certainly the big titles, they all come out on UHD.
Yeah.
Over at AVS Forum, where I used to work, Ralph Potts, he reviews tons of UHD Blu-rays.
Right.
That's mostly all he does is review UHD Blu-rays.
But
so
who wants to schlep those around?
Stick them in the drive, and it's much more of a hassle.
The other issue, unlike a paper book, these formats are going to die, maybe even before you do, which means you might hand down these UHD discs to your heirs, and they might go, thanks, Grandpa. Now what do I do?
Now what do I do? And this is an advantage of digital media, aside from the fact that you might not be able to keep it forever, that it can be revoked, but it can be transferred from one storage device to another.
Right.
This is the problem that I've thought about a lot in terms of, who can play a floppy disk anymore?
Right.
Hardly anybody. But if you transferred that to a hard disk and then transferred that to another one, it's digital data. It got copied perfectly.
Son, I'm leaving you my entire collection of zip disks.
I actually have some zip disks and a zip drive, but
everything's on them.
No computer with a SCSI port.
Right.
Remember SCSI
port? What are you going to do with it? So in some respects, bits are maybe a better storage medium, at least for long-term storage.
I think so.
Until you can print a movie.
Well, there's stone tablets.
Yeah, those have lasted.
They're still around.
Yeah. So it's an interesting question. If you're talking purely in terms of quality... Mm-hmm. Physical UHD disc is going to be the best.
It's the best, absolutely, no question. And for the enthusiast, that's all that matters, and that's fine. I like watching UHD Blu-ray discs because of the quality. As long as you have a display system and a sound system that will reproduce it as best as possible, you're in for the best experience you can get at home.
But that's a certain kind of viewer, because I, for instance... And while I have a UHD player and I've bought many UHD discs, I never rewatch those. What I really love having is an online catalog of a nearly infinite number of movies that I can browse around and say, oh, I haven't seen that in years.
Right.
Let's watch it. And
you wouldn't think of that as you're scanning your rows of discs.
Yeah. It's not going to be that complete. And I don't really, I'm not going to go, oh, boy, it would sure be nice if I had a physical disc of this.
Mm-hmm.
The difference isn't that big, is it?
No, not except if you're super critical.
Yeah.
And most of us aren't.
No.
Most people aren't. And so, no, it's not going to be that big a difference.
Of course, when the internet goes out, you might wish you had some physical media.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I got an email from our good friend John, Jammer B., talking about this with regard to audio.
He's our studio engineer, and he has friends who are massive audiophiles.
Massive audiophiles. And he's been playing around now with the Raspberry Pi. You know that one, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Little $35 computer. And there's this company in Italy that is adapting the Raspberry Pi to very high-end digital audio standards. And so he's been playing around with that. It's not very expensive. And I asked him by email, I said, so do you hear a difference? And he goes, well, no, not on my system, probably. It's all theoretical.
And not with our ears.
And not with our old ears.
We're old.
That's right. And as I learned in my high-res audio unscientific study, you know, unless you have a system that can reproduce the higher than 20 kilohertz frequencies and the greater than 96 dB dynamic range from CDs, then, you know, having that all that extra capability isn't going to get conveyed by the system to your ears.
So really it comes down to what you value. Do you value convenience or quality? And for me, the answer varies depending on what I'm watching. I'm really glad I have a Blu-ray. It's not UHD, of Barry Lyndon, Stanley Kubrick's beautiful film, boring film, but beautiful film, because that I want to see the beauty. I'm not watching that for, you know, any nostalgic purpose or any entertainment purpose, but the beauty of the images, I want those as crystal clear as I can get. But if I'm watching Zabriskie Point or some older movie, I'm really content to stream it. And most of what I watch is streamed. And I have to say, even then, the 4K, when I go watch it on my 4K TV, it does look better. It looks good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, as you mentioned during that call, as much because of high dynamic range as anything else.
Yeah.
You know, because that makes...
That does make a difference.
It makes a big difference, much more than the number of pixels.
Yeah. So whether it's your ears or your eyes, you're going to weigh out the difference in quality versus the difference in convenience. And it may not even be the same answer for the same content. Some content.
Correct.
You want to hear it perfectly, and some content doesn't matter as much.
Yep, exactly right.
That is Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, contributor at TechHive.com. Thank you for letting me elaborate a little more on that answer for Tom, because I, you know, there's a lot more to say about
that. That's a great
question. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We'll talk next week. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. All right, Scotty. It's all yours, my friend.
Thank you very much. FRAT says 320 kilobits per second or FLAC can't tell the difference. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Mike One says, from what I understand, high audio sample rates can actually make the music sound worse. I don't think it has to do with the sample rate per se. It has to do with how the music was mastered. And there are certainly examples of CDs that sound better than high-res audio tracks because of the mastering. That's the key, is how was it mastered and EQ'd.
There have been articles, though, that say that when you get to a higher sample rate, you're introducing artifacts that actually reduce the quality of the sound.
Well...
There's weird artifacts. So this was a sound engineer who wrote this article. It came out some years ago. It was really interesting. He was quoting the Nyquist theorem, which says you don't need more information than a certain number of bits. And his case
was... A certain sample rate.
Yeah, his case was if you do higher than that, you're going to introduce some artifacting that you may regret.
Well, you know, the artifacting may be bad or it may be good. I mean, one reason why some people think that high sample rate sounds better is that it allows these ultrasonic overtones, which interact with each other and produce what are called difference tones or combination tones down in the audible range. And that might sound better or it might sound worse. So that's an interesting question. I'd love for you to send me that article if you can find it.
I will find it, yeah.
Because I would love to read that and see what this guy says.
I have to shrink your clock to do it, but I will find it for you. It's kind of the article that debunks the whole high-res audio thing.
Oh, I would love to read that.
Yeah.
I would love to read that. Hey, it's Dr. Mom, Grandma, and Mr. Quest, and Loquacious. Always so glad to see you guys here on these happy Saturdays. Jammer B has never found Barry Lyndon boring. I was going to say that one movie I will always watch on disc is Billy Lynn. And I know some people don't like it. They don't, for one reason or another, the look of it anyway. But I really do. I love the look of it, the high dynamic range and the high frame rate. I also happen to like the acting in the story. A lot of people don't, and I'm in the minority there from the people I've talked to. Sorry. I really like it.
Yeah, I do own that on UHD because that's the only way really to...
That's the only way to see
that high frame rate, but...
Oh, yeah, you are. Yeah, you're getting 60 anyway.
Yeah.
He shot it at 120, but you're getting 60 on the UHD Blu-ray, which is way more than the 24 that every other movie, almost every other movie, was shot at. Another movie at a high frame rate, another Ang Lee, and as a matter of fact, more recent, called Gemini Man. I haven't bought that on UHD Blu-ray yet because the movie itself is terrible. I saw that in the theaters and I was just, oh my God, this is awful. But it looks great. The motorcycle chase is amazing. And I'll probably buy the UHD Blu-ray just for that motorcycle chase scene at 60 frames per second, which just looked phenomenal. But the story, I was just like, ho-hum, give me a break. I can do, there's so much better. So many better movies out there. Let's see. Xufi, X-U-F-I. What about Shoutcast streams or Icecast? You know, VLC used to have Shoutcast, Icecast directories that have good sample. I don't know. I've never tried Shoutcast or Icecast. I'll have to go look that up. I don't know about those. So thanks for letting me know. I will check it out.
There, Shoutcast was a proprietary version of MP3 streaming, and Icecast, which we use, is a open source version of MP3 streaming.
Oh, okay.
It's MP3.
It's MP3. So it's lower quality than FLAC or Wave or lossless codec.
Generally but how used much? For live stuff, which is like what we do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, because it has to be low. It has to be low bit stream, low bit rate. And if it's just talking, who cares? You know, it can sound, voice can sound just fine with a low bit rate, but music, not so much.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 ask Leo, the phone number, line 3, Tom. Oh, I think it did Tom in Milwaukee. Let's do Johnny in Atlanta. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I've called you a number of times over the last few weeks because I've worked with my church as we get ready to move back into the physical building.
Yes.
And so we're not going to be back into the church until around July. And when that time comes, it's going to be very restricted.
Right.
Okay, so they're going to remove all the hymnals. They're going to remove all the, you know, reading material.
Yeah, you don't want to touch anything, yeah? Okay.
Right, so nothing to be touched. Okay, so they want to broadcast or be able to display the words to the lyrics to the hymns.
Yep.
The words to the Bible scripture, you know, maybe notes from the minister. Probably, you know, using something like, you know, I've been looking at what, My Worship or some kind of, you know, software. But the challenge here that they're looking at is, what's the best way to display that? Like, do you want to use projectors? This is sanctuary has 4,821 square feet.
Wow.
is the sanctuary.
All right.
Okay, so it's about 400. It's three sections of pews, and I think the furthest pew goes back, I think, 12, 13 rows.
So actually, it's not that big.
It's more of a medium to smaller church.
Yeah.
But the person that's having me look at all this, they're saying that minimum we probably need to be looking at is probably 90 inches.
Yeah, I think you want to go projection. What you don't need to do is go with a direct view because, first of all, you're not going to get 90 inches. I have a 100-inch projector in my living room. and it's nice. You can easily get an inexpensive projector to go to hundreds of inches just by,
right.
you need enough lumens, of course, so it's bright enough. But I imagine that the sanctuary isn't super bright.
Well, that's not true because we have a number of beautiful stained glass windows.
Oh,
so
light coming.
Brightness is a problem.
All right.
Especially as, you know, sometimes the service is running around noon, right? And sometimes that's peak time for the sun that's peeking through some of the for the window. So brightness is an issue. And plus, we're going to be limited to the number of people that can come in the sanctuary. So there's probably going to be, you know, a few more services.
Spread out, too, yeah.
Right, through the day.
So there'll for sure be people at the farthest possible distance. How far would you say that is?
I have no idea. I have no idea what the farthest distance is.
Well, if you have 14 rows, and let's say there's, what, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet between the rows, the farthest people probably aren't more than 100 feet away. From the screen.
Yeah.
That's very ballpark. You know what? Let me get Scott Wilkinson in on this because he's still here. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Boy, I'm glad you called me up here because
this seems like something up your alley.
Well, yeah. Check this out. I was as your caller was talking, I went to projectorcentral.com, which I'm actually starting to write about. I'll be telling you about that in the next week or two. But right at the top of the homepage, boom. Church projector buyer's guide.
Wow.
Cool.
What? That is so cool.
It's almost as if it was meant to be.
Hey, can I ask this question? When you're doing this and you've got two screens, does that mean you have to have two projectors? Like if you're using a software, say like AG Worship.
Yeah. Each screen needs a projector. You don't need two sources, but you need two projectors.
Right.
Okay. So you need one laptop.
Split to two different. It's like have a laptop with two monitors.
Okay, so you have a laptop with two monitors, and so like you, again, I'm looking at different software, and so I guess something like Easy Worship. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Leo.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the software at all. So, I think a lot of churches use PowerPoint, believe it or not, to show the I don't want to say lyrics, to show the words of the hymns. Are they lyrics? I guess they are. The words
of the
hymns.
Yeah, they're sort
of lyrics. Yeah. That makes it sound like it's a rock opera or something. But I think you could even use PowerPoint. But yeah, if there's software, specialized software for it, that's nice too. You could use teleprompter software. Really, that's what you're doing is pretty simple. You're putting words up on a screen and scrolling through them as the song progresses.
And so the biggest cost, I guess, with this, let's just say you say Windows, for the laptop, because it would be cheaper than a Mac, would be the projectors, right? You want to put the money into the projectors themselves?
Yeah, well, that's if you want them to be visible, yes.
Yeah, they need to be pretty bright. They, in that kind of a setting, they need to be pretty bright.
Okay.
And one of the sections in this buyer's guide is how many lumens do you need?
Yeah. And you'll say how far back people are, how bright it is in the church, and they'll tell you what you need. They'll how big the screen needs to be and all of that. And yeah, I have to say Easy Worship, I'm looking at the website, looks pretty cool. It's basically a PowerPoint program for worship services.
Mm, correct.
Yeah.
And it's one of the cheaper ones. I think it's like $15 a month.
Oh, that's great.
Or maybe 20 for a church our size would be $20 a month for running through one laptop. Okay, but you're saying use that one laptop to connect to two projectors.
Yeah.
Right. Firing onto two different screens. And the screens you get are important, too. I would really look at what are called ambient light rejecting or ALR screens, which help the image be very visible in a high ambient light environment, such as a sanctuary at noon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. This is some really good information. I was given this task this week, and this is all new to me.
Yeah.
I don't even have all the budget money yet that's going to be used. But
the good news,
they were thinking TV. They were saying, "Look at TVs." But
No.
Really expensive.
A ninety inch TV is or 98-inch TV is going to be tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. The biggest reasonably cost TV will be 70 inches, and even that's going to be thousands. And if you need two of them, I think projector is easily the best way to go on that.
Yep. I agree.
When you want a big screen.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, Leo, I'm still waiting. Anxiously for your Ask the Tech Guy about live streaming. I watched your one
About
Zoom versus Jitsi.
Yeah.
Live
streaming is challenging because I feel a lot of pressure. I've been building my studio at home. The problem is that when we first set up the podcast network, Twit, which is my business for the last 15 years, This Week in Tech, we gradually got to the point where we were using pretty close to professional gear, the kind of gear a mega church might use with a TriCaster switcher. And we use digital audio from Telos. We use some really good stuff. And I'm certainly not going to want to tell people how you could spend millions to do it. But what's interesting is over the years, the stuff that I've used and spent so much money on has gotten, as always, cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. You know, we thought, oh, man, this is great. We can do what I used to do in TV on Tech TV for a tenth the cost. Well, you now can do what I did at Twit for a hundredth of the cost. And so I'll show what I consider the current state of the art for video switching. It's not going to be tens of dollars, but it'll be under $1,000. And so I think there are some things you can really do that are quite nice. Yeah, I just want to make sure I do a good job of that. The pressure, okay. The pressure is on, Johnny.
I appreciate it. And I just want to say a word out to any of your sponsors that are listening. Leo, I've listened to you for about 3 years now, and I've bought a number of products based on your recommendation based on being sponsors, and been very happy.
Thank you.
Majority of them.
Thank you.
And even after they've, I know you've had some pulling out advertising dollars because of this situation.
Because of COVID, yeah.
But they stay on your mind. And just for instance, I wanted to kind of start up a quick server the other day because I wanted to play around with creating my own Jitsi server, but I didn't want to do it on any of my machines here. And I just thought, well, I'll just let somebody host it. So I used DigitalOcean for the first time.
Yeah.
And only because, like I said, I've heard you promote them a lot. And I didn't see them on your page because I would have clicked the link there from your page to make sure you got the credit for that. But
yeah, unfortunately, advertisers come and go, but their impression lasts a lifetime. Advertisers remember that.
Yeah, remember that. If you listen to somebody's recommendation, and the only place you've got me, Leo, we've talked about this kiddingly, is Alcam.
All right. Hey, I got to go because we got to do some advertisements. Johnny, good to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scotty, it's your turn once again. I'm still looking for that article. If I find it, I'll tell you.
I just shoot it over to me. I appreciate it.
Indeed, I will.
And don't forget to put that clock up. That helps me. Anyway, hey, everybody. So good to see you all. Phoenix Warp 1 asked an interesting question in the chat room. So how does 4K work with animation? Most cameras are made to shoot 4K or HD or whatever. That's true. 4K these days. But how can animated movies be upgraded to 4K? Akira, for example, started out as DVD. But how does that translate upwards to 4K? Well, this is a great question. First of all, most animation, or at least computer-generated imagery, CGI that's used in movies, is not 4K. It's generated at 2K. And the reason is processing power and time. Rendering animation at 4K takes four times as long as at 2K. And in the movie business, time is money. So they tend not to do animation at 4K. I don't know about anime or strictly animated movies like the Pixar movies and so on. I honestly don't know whether they start or end up as 4K native files or not. I tend to doubt it, but I'm not sure. The good news is that a lot of animation can be upscaled pretty well, pretty easily, unlike photographic imagery. So I think Akira, for example, can probably be upscaled pretty well because the level of detail and the gradations, subtle gradations of color, aren't as pronounced in most animation. And so you can more easily and effectively predict if you have one pixel and it needs to become four pixels.
It looks like, I'm looking at Akira, it looks like Akira, it's so old, 1988, that it was not even CGI in the beginning with. It was probably cell animation.
Ah,
and
okay.
So you just take higher resolution pictures.
Yes, if it was cell animation, that's one thing. Sure, you can just scan it, put it through a film scanner at a higher resolution, and boom, you're done. But if it started out in a computer, it probably didn't start out at 4K. But upscaling it is easier than upscaling photographic images. So,
and in some cases, you might have the models, you might have it all, and you could re-render it at a higher resolution with higher res textures.
I think that's particularly true of video games.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
video games are based on models and vector ray analysis and triangles and so on. So, sure, those are algorithmic. And we're going to start seeing 8K video games before too long. The
right.
Sony PlayStation 5 can do 8K video games, and we're going to see them there. So I count video games as a slightly different animal than animated movies. but anyway, yeah. So it's a very interesting question. Let's see, Maverick 56. Whoops, I hate it when the scrolls. If you play video games, but in case you know the answer, is there a big difference in playing video games in 4K as opposed to HD? My PS4 is the first that came out so that it's not 4K, but wondering if you can tell the difference. In a case of a video game, you probably can, and that has to do with motion detail, right? So video games have a lot of motion in them, or else they're boring, right? I guess. I'm not a video gamer, so I don't really know, but I'm going to assume that video games have a lot of motion. They're action, right? So when there's a lot of motion, it's possible that higher pixel count will give you better resolution, although that has more to do with frame rate and refresh rate than with spatial resolution. There's two types of resolution. There's spatial resolution, which is, you know, 1920 by 1080 or 3480 by 2160 or whatever the spatial resolution is. Then there's temporal resolution, which is the resolution as you move things around, either as things move in the frame or as the camera, quote unquote, pans or moves around. So I'm now taking it back when I say that a 4K will look better in motion resolution. It won't necessarily, because that depends on temporal resolution, and that depends on frame rate and a couple of other factors. But in any event, it may or may not look better. It all depends on the processor, really, and the speed, the frame rate that the game is being rendered at. And PlayStation 4 has a faster processor than PlayStation 3. PlayStation 5 has a faster processor than PlayStation 4. So, you know, the faster the processor, the more frames it can render per second, and the better the motion blur will be. And that is how I respond to that. Loquacious, it's always so good to see you too. As I said to Loquacious in the chat room, she and I are both Ren Faire rats, and I missed the Ren Faire this year. It's obviously been canceled, and I'm bummed not to be able to go with my wife and hoist a glass, hoist a mug, a tankard of ale, and say huzzah. A Beatmaster agrees with Leo. Akira was released in theater, so there's a negative on film. True. But what was it rendered at? If it was a cell animation, then yeah, as we said, no problem at all. Dr. Mom Grandma says Team Ghibli, the collection, including Spirited Away, is now available to stream. Well, that's cool. I did enjoy Spirited Away. Howl's Moving Castle, was that Ghibli? I don't remember. And there was another one more recently, and now my brain is not quite remembering it. There's Ghost in the Shell, of course, but that was the most recent one, was a live action with Scarlett Johansson, which was okay. The graphics were beautiful. The visuals of that movie were really, really nice. So that is how I think about that. So Phoenix, I answered your question, I think. Let's see here. Retro G, could I recommend a replacement TV remote that has a headphone jack for private listening? Ooh, that's a really good question. I know that the Roku remote has a headphone jack. So if you're watching Roku, then that's great. I don't know of any universal remotes that just play the audio from the TV no matter what it's playing, whether it be a cable box or a Roku or whatever. It would have to basically, the TV would have to somehow beam the audio to the remote, I would guess by Bluetooth. I'll have to look into that.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Take care.
See you next week.
Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Larry Petaluma. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm staying alive, as John DePolter would say.
Yeah, we're lucky. We both are in Petaluma, California, Northern California, and it's beautiful up here. The weather's great. We're not having an Arctic vortex, and the sun is out, and the birds are singing, and you almost think everything's normal.
It tends to seem that way, but it's definitely not normal.
No, it's not.
It's the new normal.
The new normal, exactly. What can I do for you today?
I'm calling because I've got an old fluorescent backlit TV. It's a Samsung. It's about 12 years old.
Yeah.
And considering how much screen time I'm spending, I'm thinking about upgrading it to 4K. It's in a surround sound system connected to a Denon receiver, which is not 4K as
right.
far as I know.
Right.
And I don't want to have to upgrade both of them at the same time, considering the financial impact that might have. And I know you've said oftentimes you have to do the whole chain.
Yeah, the so-called upgrade cascade. It begins, you get a new TV, and then you realize, oh, I need to get everything else new. So do you use the Denon as an AV receiver? Do you put some other video sources into it, and then that goes to the TV, or is everything directly connected to the TV? You just use the Denon for sound.
It's a surround sound. It's a 5.1 surround sound system.
Then that won't change. That won't change. So the good news is you're feeding the Denon from the TV?
Yes.
Yeah, using the audio return channel, ARC, or do you use the optical out? How do you do that?
I'm using HDMI cables.
Okay. Probably when you get your new TV, you'll use the optical out. Then that's the same. That doesn't matter whether you're on 4K or HD, the same audio. That's not going to change. The reason I had to upgrade is because I was doing a lot of streaming, and the streaming stuff was coordinated by the AV receiver, the Denon AV receiver. So I had my Roku Ultra plugged into that. I had to buy a Roku Ultra because want 4K streaming.
As you mentioned, I just did buy a Roku Ultra.
Oh, good.
About a week ago.
That's 4K.
The old one was getting a little funky, and it works fine with the HDMI.
Ah, but you won't get 4K if you're putting the Ultra through the Denon. The Denon's not going to pass a 4K signal.
Okay, because I was curious, so I actually contacted, I emailed Denon's customer service asking them if I could do this, and they said I shouldn't have a problem with the 4K, which conflicted with what I've heard you say.
You won't have a problem with it, you just won't get 4K. You'll get 1080p. There won't be a problem. Okay. You just won't get it'll downgrade. What you'll want to do with the Ultra is plug it directly into the TV.
Okay, I got it. All right, so I can still get signal, it'll just be downscaled, and then when I want to upgrade the receiver, then I can get the full 4K.
Yeah, you can test this theory when you plug in your Denon. If you switch to a video input from the Denon and look at your TV will say, I see a 1080p signal, and your TV will play the 1080p signal. Regardless of what's going into the Denon, it's never going to output more than a 1080p signal. Because it might not even do that if it's not a high def AV receiver, but if it is, that's the best you're going to get. You're not going to get 4K out of it. It doesn't pass, in other words, it doesn't pass it through.
Yeah, I got it. How much content on TV is actually 4K anyway? There's not much.
Not on TV at all.
But on the Roku.
On the Roku, quite a bit. Much of Netflix's new stuff is 4K. Amazon Prime is shooting in 4K. If you are buying movies from Apple or Vudu or Google or Amazon, much of that will be 4K. And more importantly, the 4K HDR. That really does make a difference.
Okay.
So I
could buy the TV now and just run the Roku directly to the TV to get 4K?
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would not pass it through the Denon because the Denon won't pass the 4K information along. What happens all the way down the chain is the Roku will say, Denon, what do you speak? And the Denon will say, I speak these things, including 1080p. And it'll say, fine, here's a 1080p signal. And the Denon will say to the TV, what do you speak? And the TV will say, well, I speak 4K, but I also speak 1080p. And the Denon will say, well, I speak 1080p. And so the whole chain will end up being the best the Denon can do. But if you directly connect it to the 4K TV, the 4K TV will say the Roku Ultra, what do you speak? It'll say 4K. Good. Let's do it.
And then how do I get the surround sound system?
You feed the TV audio, which will have an optical out available to it. You could use the ARC as well, but I would use the optical out and feed that into the Denon. The Denon will have a setting, I think, on the Denon. If not, you can use the HDMI. But there'll be a setting that says, okay, yeah, TV sound. And that TV sound will be 7.1 or 5.1, and you'll be able to play it.
Great. Okay, wonderful.
Now,
all right, thank you.
You're very welcome. I have to acknowledge Mike Heiss, who is an expert on this, in the chat room, who says, my Marantz AVR all pass 4K through. So your Marantz AV receiver is not a 4K receiver, Mike? He's in our chat room, so this is going to take a while. So I would, you know, what you want to do is, and you can easily verify this, take that Denon, plug it into your 4K, your new 4K TV, plug a 4K device into the Denon, and see what the TV's seeing. My experience has been, and I guess this might depend on the device, on the AV receiver you're using, the TV will go, yeah, thanks for 1080p 60. That's great. I appreciate it. You have to check to see whether it passes through. It doesn't seem like most AV receivers are not, well, maybe they are, just passing it along. Okay, sure, whatever. Mike says, anything with HDMI 2.0 HDCP, which is most current products, will do 4K. Maybe that's the issue. Current. So, yeah, I would say just try it, see what you get. HDCP is another issue. That's the content protection, the copy protection. And that also can throw things off because, as you know, Hollywood is terrified that you are a pirate. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your questions continue. So we're working from home. We're traveling out and about. We are at more risk than ever because the bad guys come out. They see COVID-19. They see quarantine as a disaster-tunity, an opportunity for them in disaster. That's why you need ExpressVPN, a virtual private network. This is the one I use. And by the way, there are a lot of choices out there. It took me some time to really figure out which the best one was. It's clear, not just, by the way, me, but almost every site recommends ExpressVPN as the best on the market. And I'll tell you the most important reasons from my point of view. You use a VPN for security and use it for privacy. Let me talk about privacy. ExpressVPN, see, the problem with privacy, if you use ExpressVPN so that your mobile carrier or your home internet service provider doesn't know what you're doing online, doesn't log and sell it to marketers and all that stuff. If you're using it for that reason, you have to understand that you're really just kicking the can down the road. The problem no longer now is it my home ISP or my carrier. It's the VPN service provider. Those people now know everything I do. They're in effect, they become by proxy your internet service provider. So if they were to be bad guys, they could monitor what you're doing. In fact, if you get a cheap or free VPN, chances are that's exactly how they're monetizing it, by selling your information. The thing I love about ExpressVPN, not only do they not log, but they stand so, they're so strong about this, so adamant, they actually created a technology called Trusted Server. When you log into ExpressVPN, the server that you're logging into spins up your own version, your own unique Trusted Server. You operate through that the whole time. And then when you hang up, it spins it down. And Trusted Server is created in such a way that it's sandboxed. It cannot write to the disk. You live only in memory. And when you're gone, you're gone. All the information about your visit is gone. It cannot be saved to disk. And ExpressVPN actually had a third-party audit of this Trusted Server that verified that that's exactly how it works. So that's one. Number two, security. The whole idea of a VPN of any kind is that when you're at a coffee shop, an open access point, even at home, no one can tell what you're doing except the service provider where you emerge into the public internet. Again, that's why you got to choose a good one. A lot of times people don't use a VPN unless they absolutely have to because, oh, it's so slow, it slows me down. Not ExpressVPN. This is the other reason I love it. I've never seen a faster, and maybe it has to do with Trusted Server, I'm not sure. I've never seen a faster VPN. I know one thing that makes it fast. They have servers in nearly 100 countries. So that means you're almost always using one that's very fast nearby. I always use the San Francisco one. So that really cuts down on the hops, makes it a lot faster. Fast enough, though, that here's an interesting thing. No lag. You can stream HD videos, no buffering. And that brings up another reason you might like ExpressVPN, because you can log into other countries. You can appear to emerge on the internet in England. So let's say you want to watch Doctor Who. You've got a Netflix subscription. It's not on Netflix US. It is on Netflix UK. So you fire up Netflix, fire up ExpressVPN, say, I want to be in London. Suddenly you're in the UK. You refresh your Netflix, and there's Doctor Who. Works in Japan with anime. There's a lot of great anime. That's really clever. One button click. You can set up your grandparents with it. You can set up your family members who are not sophisticated. Just put ExpressVPN on their phone, their tablet, their laptop, even their TV, their smart device. And they one button click, they're secure. That's really important. Wired, CNET, The Verge. Everybody says ExpressVPN is number one. For those reasons, it is the best. And, you know, there have been cases where the police have come, seized ExpressVPN servers, and there's nothing on them. We know that's the case. It really does it. So that's another kind of audit, isn't it? Protect yourself with the VPN I use and trust. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. You'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free in a one-year package. It's really interesting. I think because we're all kind of trying to stay safe these days, and because we're doing a lot of stuff at home, ExpressVPN has suddenly exploded in popularity. Maybe it's because I keep telling everybody about it. I don't know. I'll take a little credit. It's really good. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. If you hear other people say it, oh, yeah, Leo was talking about that. Just use our address, if you will. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. We thank ExpressVPN for supporting us during this crisis, for making a great product, and we thank you for using that address and letting them know you heard it here. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. The great Richard Penniman. Little Richard. He will be missed, but I think you're going to see a lot about him over the next week, the man who really invented rock and roll and taught Paul McCartney how to go, woo! Leo Laporte, the tech guy, RIP, little Richard. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Joey on the line from San Diego. Hi, Joey.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
How you doing, pal?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, always happy to talk to you, man. I look forward to it.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
You know, I guess you kind of talked about the one question I had, because I was going to ask you. I guess I'm older like you, and I listen to that Apple format. I love music, so the AAC format, I would just kind of wanted your opinion on, you know, I listen to it, and I just enjoy it.
It sounds good. Yeah. So it's an the whole story is kind of interesting. You might have, can I tell you a story, Joey?
Only you and I all know.
Put your head back, relax, put your feet up, and I'm going to tell you a little tale. A little tale of audio compression. It all goes back to a German company called Fraunhofer. The Fraunhofer scientists noticed an interesting feature in human hearing. It's actually been known for some time. When you're hearing one frequency or a frequency, audio at related harmonic frequencies, but not the same, disappear. So what they observed was, look, if you're listening to music and you're hearing a particular sound, it means that related sounds on other harmonics, you're not hearing them. Your ear doesn't hear them. We could take them out. And this was a huge revelation to them, because if they could take that data out, they could shrink the file. And so that was the premise behind MP3 audio.
Can I ask you a quick question, Leo?
Sure.
Now that you explained that.
Yeah.
You did a good job explaining that. And you always hear that. But those frequencies that they're taking out are very important, because although you can't hear them, your body responds.
I think so. And I think that it's also an imperfect science. So I think you're exactly right. When you're listening to MP3s, if you are taught what to listen to, or somebody says, listen to this, you can sort, you can tell. The quality is not the same. And that's what the Fraunhofer science...
You don't respond to it. You're not...
Yeah,
you're not,
there's no emotional... I agree, it's Joey.
Nothing.
And there's even audio artifacts. And one way that they can kind of make an MP3 sound better is by increasing the bit rate. So normal MP3s, the ones you most often hear, the ones you buy from music companies and stuff, are stereo, 64 kilobit per channel. So each, the left channel has 64,000 bits per second of sampling, and the right channel has 64,000 bits. Together, it's 128 kilobits per second. That's the...
Don't Apple claim 256?
Well, wait a minute, stop, because I'm not done yet. The story has just begun, my friend. So 128, that was the standard for a long time. And a lot of people felt you can't tell the difference. You can. If you're taught what to look for, you can. I had a Dolby scientist bring me into the Dolby Labs in San Francisco. I was walking by. He said, hey, Leo, psst, come here. And literally, psst, come here. Listen. And he played an A-B comparison. And if you know what to listen for, you can tell the difference. But you can make that less apparent by increasing the bit rate. 128, not enough. Let's make it, as you said, 256 or even 320,000 bits per second. And by slowly increasing the bit rate, there are other things they can do, something called variable bit rate, where they sense it's more complex music. They use more bits to represent it. All of that can improve it. But the same thing is still happening. It's what we call lossy compression. They're taking bits of the sound out, bits that psychoacoustically you don't hear, or you theoretically don't hear, but they're still removing bits of the music. That's how the compression works. The Fraunhofer guys came back to the table some years later, said the technology has improved. We can do a better job. And they made AAC. That's the one Apple uses. That's the second. That is a successor to MP3. And in theory, a little bit better. Mostly what they were able to do
a
is say,
better.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing, though. They're still removing.
No comparison to me, but okay.
Yeah, it sounds better, right? They got better. They're still taking chunks of the music out. But the main advantage of AAC was we can, at 128 or 160 kilobits per second, we can give you much better quality. Apple decided to release all of its music, all the iTunes music, on 256 kilobits per second AAC, and they felt this is as good as it needs to be, almost CD quality. But remember, a CD is not recorded with a lossy compression technique. There is no loss of the audio. The CD has everything. So Apple also offers a way of recording digitizing CDs called Apple Lossless. This isn't AAC. It's not MP3. They're not taking any chunks out. They're compressing it without losing any data. In fact, if you take an Apple Lossless file and burn it to a CD, it will be bit for bit identical to the original CD. So,
can that play on iTunes
can play iTunes? Apple Lossless. There's a very, almost maybe a more popular open version of that called FLAC. FLAC. But both of them are really similar because it's the same bit content, ultimately.
Leo, okay, can you buy this music on the Apple Tune, like the lossless?
No, they don't sell lossless. No, they don't sell lossless. I don't think they sell lossless. I think they only sell AAC. They don't even mention, by the way, they don't even want you to have to think about this. But there are plenty of, so they don't mention what our bit rate is and all that stuff unless you look deep within it. There are plenty of places you can buy music that is recorded either at a higher bit rate and then distributed at using FLAC or Apple Lossless. iTrax.com is one, I-T-R-A-X.com. They call it high definition music. They make new music and they record it with higher quality equipment using 24-bit sampling. There are many, but that's just one. There are many.
You know what, Leo?
Yeah.
The jury's out on those guys, though.
Well, the jury is out.
They claim that they do that, like you said, but a lot of times they don't.
Well, iTrax does everything right because these are new recordings. AIX, also new recordings. But there are companies like HDTrax.com, that's the one you're thinking of, where they got caught releasing upsampled versions of lower quality recordings, which means there's no additional information in there. So you do want to be careful. And by the way, if you're buying something that was recorded pre-digital era, pre-1996, if you're buying one of my favorite albums, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, that was recorded on reel-to-reel tape. There's no high resolution anything in that. You know, there's no point in buying anything better than CD quality of that because that information wasn't recorded. It was put on a reel-to-reel tape. So it's silly to think of high bitrate music unless it's modern music and recorded digitally. And even then, you only want to buy the bitrate that was recorded at and nothing better because that's the best copy of that. Anyway, I think most important to understand in all of this is that MP3 and AAC are lossy. They take chunks of the music out. But you don't have to worry about that because your ear probably can't hear it, especially at a higher bit rate. If you are concerned about that, CD quality is probably as good as your ear can hear. There's some still debate about that. And anything that's recorded losslessly using Apple Lossless or FLAC from CD quality is completely the same quality and sounds very, very good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, man. He's breathing the mountain air, man. He ain't going nowhere, man, because he's Johnny Jett, our travel guy. Grounded. That should be the name of your biography. Grounded during the COVID crisis. Hey, Johnny Jett, how's your spirit?
How you doing? Speaking of grounded, I just tweeted and actually put in the chat room a link to a blog about grounded planes. And you got to check out some of these photos.
I've seen them. Oh, my God. Just lined up on the runway. Wingtip to wingtip.
I mean, the JetBlue one is just mind-boggling. And so this guy Andy's blog, he's got a good blog, and he takes photos from helicopters. And actually,
oh, I was wondering where he got these. Yeah, so they're aerial.
They're all aerial.
Yeah.
And my buddy Sam Chewy, who I think started this whole helicopter photography from helicopters,
not planes, aviation, not quadcopters, started it all.
Huh? Actually, I interviewed him this week for my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to check out these planes, these images of planes being grounded all across the country, most of the planes are parked in the desert, Victorville in California, in New Mexico, also in Arizona. But some of these photos here are like in Pittsburgh, and it's really surreal when you see it. There's so many planes on the ground right now. But travel is picking up a little bit. I just looked at the TSA woman we talked about last week who tweets it out. 215,000 people went through TSA all across the country yesterday. But keep in mind, it's usually about 2.6 million. And JFK alone will do 100,000 in a day normally. But it's slowly picking up. I still do not think it's a good time to travel. I will not get on a plane until they have a vaccine or, you know, it's proven that, you know, the antibodies work, things like that, even though I've not gotten it. But I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, we were just debating whether the test I got was worth anything. But I'm negative. My son's negative. My wife's negative, according to the Quest Diagnostics Labs. But I think there's some question about, A, how many false negatives they get, and B, more importantly, what the heck you're going to do with it anyway? Do we know that that makes you immune? We don't.
Right. I'm going to turn my video off, by the way, to hopefully save some bandwidth.
Because it's radio, so I don't think it matters.
Yeah. Yeah. So who wants to see my face anyway? Everyone says I have a face for radio.
That JetBlue picture is amazing. Go to Johnny's site. It's really incredible. Or Andy's travel.
And I tweeted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, so if you want to travel virtually this week, I just also put in the chat room and tweeted a link to Paris's Louvre Museum. So you can go on a virtual tour. I don't know if you've seen this yet. But you can go step by step through the museum.
I've done those before. It's not as much fun as going to Paris, having a little lunch in the cafe, going to see the Louvre, waiting in line with a bunch of people, having the taxi drivers look funny at you, then having a nice cup of coffee afterwards. There's just nothing to beat that, I have to say. That's why I traveled, not just for the sights. You understand?
But listen. I understand, but there are some people who cannot travel. And
right.
Not
no, I can't. Times. I can't either. Oh, just in general, yeah.
Just in general. So, yeah. I mean, you know, if they've always wondered what it looked like in the Louvre, I think...
it's better than nothing.
This is your best chance of looking at it.
But I'd hate for people to think that travel is about going to the Louvre.
No, it's not. Obviously not. It's about meeting people, trying the food, experiencing different things, cultures especially... and that's the main thing when you travel.
Yeah.
I mean, before I started traveling internationally, and I didn't get on a plane internationally until I was 23 years old. I was afraid to travel internationally. Main reasons because of fear. I didn't know how I would if I'd be able to breathe there in other countries because I had asthma. I didn't know.
Can I tell you a little secret?
Sure.
To this day, when I'm planning a trip, I get scared. I'm nervous. What if I don't speak the language? What if I get there and I can't get any money? What's going to happen? And you just, that fear is normal. It's part of the adventure. And you just go, okay, I'm going to make it. It's going to be fine. There's always the American embassy if I get in trouble. And you just go. And it always, always turns out amazing. Sometimes you have adventures, but that's the point. Right.
For sure.
We're traveling for the adventure.
Hey, before I left the country, I thought I'd be unsafe in other countries. I actually feel safer in other countries than I do in America. And that's got nothing to do with political. This is no matter who was president. You go out to these other places, you're like, wow, you know, it's safer for the most part. And actually, I think U.S. is ranked like number 43 in the country in the world.
Even that's kind of unimportant. There's some risk. There's risk going out the door. There's risk in life. But that shouldn't let you stop you from traveling.
No.
The hardest thing is the language issue. And now technology and, frankly, the fact that most people speak English, that's not the issue it was. In fact, in some ways, I feel like travel is less fun because it's less different than it used to be. The language barrier isn't so bad. It's easier. The money, it's so much easier. Remember, you used to have to go to the American Express office, get traveler's checks, countersign them all, and then bring them to Europe and then hope they take American Express and all of that stuff. Now you just go to an ATM machine. They say, you need some euros? Yeah, I need some euros. And you're done. It's easy.
My last trip to London, I did not take out money from the ATM. Right. Actually, I rarely ever take money out. I just use my iPhone. Yeah. I just use my iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I do.
It is important if you're going to do that to use a credit card that doesn't charge you exorbitant fees for international use, right?
Exactly. Make sure you get a credit card that does not have foreign transaction fees. I always carry multiple ones. You know, American Express, that isn't always accepted, although I've been to places where they only accepted that card. Usually Visa, MasterCard, you're good to go. And the big trick, by the way, when you're going to London and other international places, when they do scan your credit card or your phone and they say, oh, you're American, would you like to pay in U.S. dollars? Never pay in U.S. dollars because they're taking a percentage. Always say, I want to pay in local currency.
Right. Right.
And that drives me nuts when I'm traveling internationally and they try and scam me like that.
It's so much fun to have the local currency. They're all different colors and have pretty pictures on them. The French money has naked women on it. It's so much fun. Now, when they can come up with a way, okay, I can go to the Louvre virtually, but when they can come up with a way for me to have Bertillon ice cream from Île Saint-Louis in Paris virtually, then maybe I'll consider not traveling. Until then, I can't wait to get back. I just can't wait. I know it's going to be a while, but we're going to hang in there. We're
it's going to be a while. And I do think cash is going to go away. I think most people are going to use credit cards.
This will hasten that, won't it?
For sure. I mean, I already was doing it way before that. Yeah. And I think others are too.
You know, it is a little sad, a little bittersweet for me because it was 12 days from today that we were going to get on an airplane and fly to Budapest and then get on a riverboat and go to Munich, and we were going to see the Oberammergau festival in Germany right about this time. And so it's a little sad, a little bittersweet.
But for sure. I was supposed to be calling in from New Orleans right now for a travel conference and then flying to Toronto.
Yeah. That's all right. We're going to get on the road again, everybody, and it's going to be fun. I look forward to getting on a cruise ship again. I like cruise ships, and I hope that
Carnival announced this week that they're going to start.
I'm not getting on it this year.
they announced August 1st, which I do not think is going to happen.
That's nuts.
The CDC is going to put a hammer on it. But yeah.
It's not even that.
$28 a night cabins.
I know. You can open it up, but you're going to see a lot of people say, well, yeah, nice, but I'm not going. Even at $20 a night.
Still people signing up for it.
Are they?
Remarkable.
Hey, if I knew I were immune, I might too, but who knows, right?
No.
JohnnyJet.com. That's his website. He's at JohnnyJet on the Twitter. He's on Instagram too. And he's definitely the guy to follow if you love travel.
And YouTube.
And YouTube. Oh, he's got a great 39 questions segment. I love it. I'm on it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, it's going to be fun to go on cruises soon because nobody will be on them. They'll be empty.
I don't think so. Although Shanghai, we could have brought up Shanghai Disney. They announced that they're opening on May 10th, I think, and they sold out in 3 minutes, but they're only doing 30% of the capacity, which would be, you know, much better experience.
And outdoors is not as bad. The prudent thing to do, and it's what I intend to do, is just watch as these places reopen and see if you get clusters of infection. And you know, you don't have to be the first one on the boat or at Disney.
Right.
Wait a little bit. Watch. See what happens. And if everything's good, maybe you can go.
Yeah. I mean, my problem with the cruise is that it's not about getting sick, although that is one of the tops, but the top is not being able to find a dock or someone to let you off.
Yes, that's right.
So
that's why the first cruise I'm going on is a river cruise.
That's right.
Then I could just swim ashore.
For sure. So you got a second for me to ask you a quick question?
Yeah, week? That wasn't the question, whether I was negative. Okay, what's the question? Yes.
How about for podcasting? You know, these 39 travel questions I do, Zoom sends me a file, an audio file.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? Why don't I just upload it to a podcast? Which one do you recommend?
Use anchor.fm. You can upload it to Anchor FM. You can add music if you want or not. And they turn it into a podcast to put it on iTunes and everywhere else. It makes it very, very easy. They store it for free. There's no cost. It's kind of the YouTube of audio podcasts.
Okay. And I heard of them, but you recommend them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've used them. Yeah.
Okay.
That's they're owned by Spotify now. They'll be around for a while.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. There's some dispute over whether my negative test even means that I'm negative. But even if I'd got, which of course, you know, that changes nothing. If I'd gotten positive, then we'd have to have a conversation about what the hell that means.
Right.
Yeah.
I would do one more to see, you know, but.
Yeah, but then what am I going to do?
Well, they even say 5 to 15% of people in China have gotten it again. So.
Yeah. Right.
And Seoul just came out yesterday saying that, you know, they're going to shut down bars again because they're starting to get more cases because they opened up the bars.
See, that's why I'm going to watch with interest to see what happens with this slow reopening. And we'll know what we can do. We'll know how far we can go. It's all still a little bit of a mystery. We don't know everything we need to know yet.
And next week, by the way, we could have talked about like states that are not allowed. Like Maine does not want any outsiders. If they, you do come, you have to stay quarantined for 2 weeks. And so, I mean, countries are like that, and there are states beginning to be like that.
Right.
And besides, I mean, Hawaii for sure. Hawaii is the most vigilant.
Yeah. I wish I could go to Hawaii, but they won't let me in. Actually, you know, I realized the last time I was in Hauai, we went to Kauai. It's too remote. It's beautiful, and I love it. But you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's too remote. Yeah. I need to be in nature, but I need to be able to get in a car and get somewhere.
I'm with you. I'm the same way. I'm more of a city guy.
Yeah, I like the city. I don't want to live in a city anymore. I need to live near a city.
Exactly. So that way, if there's an emergency or you need supplies, you can just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, you can get deliveries.
Yes. All right, John. Stay care. Stay healthy. Take care. Take care of the fam.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now, you listen to that and you go, yeah, Little Richard invented rock and roll. It's true. You can hear his influence everywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, line 3, Linda, Los Angeles. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Linda.
Boy, it's so nice to talk to you. I've listened to you for forever.
Oh, thank you. It's welcome.
I've been a fan for a long, long time.
Oh.
First time I've called, though. So this is really wonderful.
First time. That's what you're a first time, long time listener, first time caller, as they say.
That's right. I am.
Well, good.
And you have helped me so much through the years. I have really been led to different places from you. And so you've never led me astray.
Well, let me lead you astray now. No, that's wrong. No.
Let's keep our perfect record.
Okay, let's do it. What do you need to know?
Well, I have many text messages that are really important to me. Plus, because of this staying at home all the time, I have a lot of Zoom messages that I have recorded. They've not been started by me. They've been something that I've been receiving. So
okay.
I have recorded a lot of them, and they're all extremely important to me.
Yes.
What I would like to know, I know they're backed up, I think, on the cloud, but and I have an iPhone, but I want to know, like just the text messages, is there a way I can back them up and then print them out?
Oh, interesting. So you're on an iPhone, and everything that you're talking about is on the iPhone.
Correct.
Okay.
So I can see it on my iPhone, I can see it on my iPad and my Apple laptop.
And if you go into the settings on your iPhone, and you've already done this, obviously, because you can see them everywhere, but if you go in the settings on your iPad or your iPhone or even your Mac, but mostly on the iPhone, if you go in there, you'll see with iCloud, you can back everything up. You can even, with messages, store them on iCloud. So all of that is backed up if you set it so. You don't have to. And one of the reasons you might not want to is because then you're going to have to pay for iCloud storage as you start to fill it up.
But, right, and I do that. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah, no, it's. I encourage people to do it because then you have a backup.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
What concerns me is it still worries me that I'm going to lose these. These are so important to me. Some of the text messages, not all of them, and also the voice.
Here's the easiest way to do it, and you don't have to. There is software you can get to do this, but the easiest way to do it is to mail them to yourself. Email.
Oh.
So if you go to the message app on your phone and you say, oh, I really want this. And it's, by the way, not by message, but by conversation.
Okay, good.
You tap and hold the message, and you can copy it and copy it to the clipboard, and then go and you can do that if you select all the messages in the conversation or just one message. So you can copy whatever part you want. Okay. Then you go to the Mail app in iOS. You open up a mail message, and you paste it.
Oh, good.
You've done two things by doing this. One, you're backing it up because you're mailing it to yourself.
Right.
Two, you can then print the message.
Oh, that's great.
From your email. So that's the easiest because that you don't need to get any extra software. There are programs. Ecamm makes a program that will do this. There are a lot of companies that make programs that will take data off of your iPhone and let you print it and stuff. But they're more complicated. And this, if you're content to do that, I think I you're fine. Be. Yeah. And then if you go into somebody telling me, and this may be the case, you know, if you do turn on this save messages in the cloud and your messages are showing up on your Mac, your old messages as well as any new messages, then somebody said you can actually print directly from messages on the Mac. I have not tried that, but if that's the case, that would be even easier.
Great. I will check that.
Check
out.
If there's a print option. Yeah.
That is fabulous. And then what about voice memos, doing an extra backup for them? Just so I don't miss them. Lose them by.
And I get this question a lot because, and this is challenging because, your voice messages, there's no really easy way to back those up. So you do need a third-party program. And the one I recommend comes from a company called Ecamm. It's called PhoneView. Now, if you're going to go out and get this, and it's I don't think it's very expensive. It's maybe, it's $30. If you're going to go out and get this, you can then use PhoneView on your Mac to print out the messages, to save them. But you can also get your voicemails and save them onto your Mac. Really is a way of treating your iPhone more like a storage device than an iPhone. So okay. Anything that's on your iPhone becomes becomes like a file on your Macintosh.
Oh, that's great. Because yeah. I'm just so worried about I always back everything up. I have online backup and all of that.
You have been. Thank you, Linda. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I listened to you.
Yes, I think you took a good. You learned a lot. That's good.
I did. I've learned a lot. I really have.
So you're gonna like. I think Ecamm for people who want to extract data from their iPhone, like voicemail. There are a few other ways to do it, but they all involve third party software. Apple does not give you a way to do that. Ecamm is the easiest, the best. ecamm.com, and the program is called PhoneView.
Yeah, I got that down.
And it's for Macs. Excellent. Yeah.
That's great.
The chat room has checked, and Mac OS Messages does have a simple print message. So that's forget the email thing. You can just print it right from Messages on the Mac, as long as you're syncing. And that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah, I will make sure that I'm syncing. I'm pretty sure I am, but I will go and check and make sure that I am. Oh, this is great. Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Linda. My pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Nice to talk to you. Don't be a stranger now.
I definitely will not be.
First time's a little scary, right? But then once you do it, it's like...
I'm sitting here drinking water, and I'm thinking, oh, God, don't let my voice go away.
No. You see, it's easy. It's just us friends. We're just, two people talking.
I tried to think of it just talking to you. Just
nobody.
You.
Well, I wish more people listened, but frankly, it is just us.
Yeah, it is.
Have a great day, Linda. Stay healthy.
You too. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care. Kathy on the line from Southern California. Hello, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Uh-oh. Did I push all buttons correctly?
Hi.
There. Oh, there. Oh, why? Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
My
Long-time
pleasure.
Listener, first-time caller.
Oh, nice. Two in a row. Thank you.
I have, I think, a rather dumb question. I probably should know the answer to this, but you're the tech.
No. Please. People say, oh, it's a dumb question. That's the best kind, because then I can sound smart.
Oh, you're so nice. Well, I have a niece. She's newly graduating from college.
Yay.
She got a part-time job, but she's
Yay.
A contractor. Yeah, on the road. I loaned her, gave her my Dell 18-inch laptop.
Oh, you're so sweet.
But she needs internet access remotely.
Right.
She doesn't want to tether her phone. But I'm trying to figure out.
No,
that
she has to.
That's not going
to. No, she has to tether the phone.
So the
other thing you could do is buy something that will be a remote hotspot for her. But as she's driving around, there are some machines that have built-in LTE, cellular access. That Dell is not one of them, I don't think. Check. Yeah.
Okay.
Then otherwise, you can buy her. Sometimes they call them a MiFi. And it just go to any carrier. You can do it online and say, I need a Wi-Fi access point that gets cell data. Now, Kathy will be paying for this unless you get her to pay for it. But that will give her data anywhere she goes. And it's just like doing a hotspot with her phone, except it's not a phone. It's just a little credit card sized device.
I love it. Oh, see, you are the man with all the answers.
You see?
Thank you so much.
You see? Hey, congratulations to all the 2020 grads.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Kathy. first, a word from our sponsor. And I know you know these guys. Simply Safe. Everybody, stay safe. Now, I know you say, well, hey, I don't have to have a Simply Safe anymore because I'm home all the time. That actually, if you think about it, is an even better reason to have home security. You're home all the time. You don't want somebody going, I'm going to break in anyway. Simply Safe. We all need a little psychological kind of security blanket. And that's what Simply Safe is for me. Feeling safe at home is more important than ever. Simply Safe Home Security, I've been recommending them for years. The story is great. It was a young couple, Harvard-educated, MIT-educated engineers. They were renters. They said, I don't like this idea of having an alarm company come in, install sensors, screw them into the wall. We don't even own this place. Then we have to pay $45 a month for monitoring. We're going to make a better way. And they did. And they were actually, over the years, Simply Safe has become the best way, the most popular way to protect your home. Started out great for renters because you don't need an installer. You just peel and stick, and they have all the sensors you can want. Nobody's got to come in your house. No contact. They'll ship it to you. You install it yourself, and they have motion detectors, glass break sensors, window and door open sensors. They have water leak sensors. They have everything, carbon monoxide, cameras. It all goes to this home unit, this base station, which is indestructible. And the best 24/7 monitoring with no contract, no fees, at a third the cost of the other guys. Just 50 cents a day. You'll be able to set yourself up in an hour, and you're protected 24/7 with emergency dispatch for break-ins, for fire, for anything, water leaks, whatever you need. And police respond faster to Simply Safe because they can verify that there is an actual break-in happening. They don't, you know, they know we're not getting false alarms from Simply Safe. U.S. News and World Report said Simply Safe is simply the best overall home security for 2020. Right now, if you go to simplysafe.com/twit, you'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. I'm thinking you want to be safe at home. You want to feel safe at home. You're sleeping at night. You want a good alarm system. You don't want somebody coming in the garage or the back door. You want that feeling of security, but you don't want a guy coming and installing it. Not these days. You want Simply Safe. Put it up yourself in an hour, get exactly what you need, pay less, and get great 24/7 professional monitoring for much less money with no contract. It's a 60-day risk-free trial. Go to simplysafe.com/twit. Simplysafe.com/twit. Oh, please use that one so they know you heard it here. From Simply Safe and of course, all of us here, stay safe, stay healthy. SimplySafe.com/twit. Thank you, Simply Safe, for keeping us safe and just kind of giving us some peace of mind. It's important. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, that's what I'm here for. It's just kind of a little get together we do every weekend at this time, just kind of. You know, people interested in technology, talking about technology. Doesn't have to be all problem solving, although, as you can see, I kind of like doing that. And by the way, I know I can't answer every question, but we've got a pretty good team of people. All these people listening on our 200 stations all over the country, they have good answers. They can call in. We also have a great chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's where Team Tech Guy lives. Those are some pretty advanced nerds sitting in there waiting for waiting for your question. 8888 Ask Leo. And of course, the website is a great place to go to not only ask, but to answer questions. It's free. It's open to all. TechGuyLabs.com. There's no sign up. Our shows are there. Every show we've done, this is 1,600 something. We're almost to 1,700 shows. The audio and video is there from previous shows, but also there's text of the answers to the questions and their answers. But you can also go into that part and say, I have a better answer, or I have another idea, or what about this? And I really appreciate if you do that. I don't take it as an insult by any means, because there's always many ways to answer any given question, and I know I don't have the right answer all the time. So that's fine. Correct me. But do it on the website, tech, or on the phone too is okay. TechGuyLabs.com. No sign up. It's free. Chris in Burbank is next. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. So I have an issue. I have a I live in a condominium that's built in the 60s. So you can kind of hear every single thing that the neighbors do.
Oh, yay. That doesn't sound like fun at all.
No, it's not. So I have a problem. I like tech. So I have a 65-inch Samsung HD 4K, Ultra HD 4K.
Okay.
But the sound, obviously, is the standard sound. So what kind of a sound bar can I get?
Do you want to drive the neighbors nuts or not?
Not drive the neighbors nuts, but I also want to be able to enjoy my TV.
Yeah, this is the challenge in an apartment. I like big TV sound, and I've always, I've added speakers, particularly subwoofers. The low frequency stuff really drives the neighbors crazy. I bet you'll hear them if they play music. What you mostly hear is boom, boom, boom coming through the walls, because the high frequency sound tends to be stopped by the walls, but the lowest frequencies go right through them, and it's so annoying. So I'd be careful about getting a subwoofer. There are sound bars that have subwoofers. This certainly enhances the sound. And when you get your own home, I would get two subwoofers and say, take that, world. I like it. But until then, sound bars are a great way to give yourself a richer, more enjoyable sound, but also more intelligible sound at a fairly low cost. And you can, if you don't get a subwoofer and you get a sound bar that's aiming into your apartment, not across the wall, you could probably do it without bothering the neighbors too very much. So
in particular, if it's cost isn't a huge issue, but I imagine if you're just talking about a sound bar, they're not.
Oh, you can get them for $50. You can get them for $5,000. It really depends. Yeah. So I'm not going to recommend. No, I wouldn't do that to you. Scott Wilkinson last week talked, or maybe it wasn't Scott. Somebody last week talked about Sonos has a new, I think, $800 sound bar. And the Sonos sound bars are quite good, but I think that price is a little out of control. Last week, Scott did mention a soundbar he liked a lot. Now I'm going to have to remember it. You put me on the spot here. Does anybody remember the soundbar that Scott was talking about? I wish I could remember. Let me see if he reviewed it.
I heard you mention something about a Roku soundbar a while back. I didn't know.
I don't know if I would recommend that. In the past, we've recommended soundbars from a lot of different companies. Vizio, I think, is probably the one I would recommend. But he just was talking. Was it the Vizio? I don't think so. Klipsch has a good soundbar for about $300. Vizio is about half that. If you want, Vizio even has one that's a little more expensive that does Atmos. I'm not sure. Are the neighbors above you too?
There's neighbors above me. I'm not super worried about him. The mostly would be the TV itself is not on an adjoining wall, but the couch that I sit on is. And so it's the neighbors that would be basically,
on the other side of that. He did talk last week about the Sennheiser Ambio, but that's $2,500. So we're not gonna go there.
The TV.
No, I would look at the Vizio, VIZIO soundbars. They have a range of prices. The more you spend, the better the sound will be. Particularly in terms of sub, the low frequencies. Mm-hmm. So generally, if you want a low frequency, you're going to have a big speaker to move that much air. That's why they tend to put them in subwoofers, which are standalone boxes with one big cone in them. So you're not going to put that in a sound bar. So you're not going to get a lot of bass, but you can get a little bit better bass. The more expensive Vizios also have, and this is why I asked about your neighbors upstairs, upward firing speakers to give you Atmos sound. So they bounce the sound off the ceiling. I think that's kind of silly. I wouldn't spend a lot of money. I would say Vizio, and there are a range of them. Scott was talking about the Vizio last week, I guess, so you could go back to the last week's show. I don't remember what model number he recommended, but all of the Vizios, I think, are a good bang for your buck.
They're worth it.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Probably don't. I wouldn't go for one with A subwoofer?
just for
the neighbors?
The neighbor below me definitely is probably my biggest concern. Is the one that complains the most would be the one below me.
Yeah, then you definitely don't want that. But for $179, they have a 36-inch soundbar. You don't need a subwoofer. You don't need Atmos either. You don't need that stuff that fires upward either. I think that's kind of silly. So you're in a good price range, well under $200 for almost all the Vizios. They're really good. Yeah.
All right, that'll be perfect.
And they, you know, I see a Vizio with built-in dual subwoofers. I can't imagine they'd give you much bass.
Okay.
But if you, yeah, it's too bad we can't go listen to them these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm locked in, so it's like, I guess I don't have much of a choice.
Well, and this is a good time to upgrade your TV sound, right?
Yeah.
You should enjoy it as best you can. Honestly, especially if you're in an apartment and you have neighbors, I think the best way to go is with headphones, because you can crank it and really enjoy it. And headphones are going to be less expensive. Problem is, you need a wire between you and the TV. That may not be the best way to go either. But it's certainly the case that any sound bar will be much better than the built-in TV sound. So go with the Vizio.
It's like 30, and then it's about the same the entire time.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It also solves a problem Scott was talking about last week with centered channel sound, where you can't hear the voices very well. Vizio makes a 36-inch sound bar that has dual subwoofers, which aren't going to be too deep, but at least give you an appearance of bass. And that's $140. I think that's probably a very good way to go.
So $140. All right. I'll go give those a look.
Yeah. They're on Amazon. They're everywhere. You can buy audio gear. Hey, thanks for the call. Enjoy your sound. And, you know, the nice thing is if you get something like this and the neighbors are annoying you, now you have weapons. Now you have something you can do about it. You know what I'm saying? Can you dig where I'm coming from here? Oh, yeah, neighbors? Oh, yeah? Take that. Boom, boom, akalakalaka, boom, boom, boom. Leo Laporte, akalakala, boom. The tech guy, 88, ask Leo. Thank you, Lady Laura, our musical director. Perking up the place here with your musical selections. Paul in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Paul.
Akalaka boom.
Akalaka okay. Boom.
Not first time, but it's been a while. Couple things, actually. You talked about the speakers. When I moved to a new house here about 4 years ago, a little over, and I had a couple of JBL speakers then, and shortly thereafter bought the Pioneer Andrew Jones speakers.
Those are the ones, yeah.
Yeah, so I got those and a subwoofer. Okay, and remember, this is shortly after we'd moved in, and had an older Denon receiver. And so these things sounded pretty darn good.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, yeah, okay. But then you and Scott started talking about the center channel situation, which is really helpful for us because my wife and I are 70, and, you know, it's like trying to hear that stuff coming through on the sides. So I got a small speaker that I had. It was not fantastic, but it's decent.
As a center channel,
As a center channel, put that sucker on there. The other thing I did, though, was I forgot that I had never ran the Odyssey.
With the
new speaker.
Right. This is a feature that some receivers have where they have a microphone, and you put the microphone where you would be seated, and they run through a bunch of funny sounds, boom, boom, and they test the speakers and then adjust them for your room. It's a really good idea.
Exactly. Well, this is, like I said, this is a several-year-old Denon, and it had that feature. And I said, you know, well, what the heck, we'll rebalance it. Because I never balanced it with the subwoofer.
Yes.
It was a difference between night and day.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot believe the difference. I mean, they sounded good to begin with before, but that just...
No, it's a very good tip. Every room has different characteristics, acoustics. When you add speakers, you're really changing the setup. And so if you're lucky enough to have a receiver that has it, Odyssey is one brand, Audessey. This one I have on my Denon as well. But there are others, some systems have their own. But if your system came with a microphone, you bet. Change the room, change the, even if you change a chair, you should run the Odyssey again. Yeah.
Almost tossed that microphone away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's good you kept it. Yeah. It's the one with a really long wire.
Yeah. I put it on a tripod and it worked perfectly.
It is a very, very good idea to do that.
That center channel just makes a heck of a big difference for understanding stuff in movies. And
I wouldn't blame your age or, you know, aging ears, even though I, like you, have the same issue. And certainly it becomes exacerbated with age, just like reading a menu in a – those restaurants seem darker all the time. But but it also, I think, is – the and maybe even more the cause of it is that more and more of what you're listening to is mixed for a center channel. As more home systems have 5.1 sound – they're just assuming, oh, he's going to have a center channel. We're going to put the dialogue in the center channel. And if you don't have it, it's muddled in with everything else. So I don't think it's completely us. I think it's also the way stuff is mixed these days.
Well, what I told Kim I was calling about was a couple of confessions here. I guess I'm missing things. I am visually impaired, so I might have missed something in the software. But I've got iDrive and like it a lot. I've got it on my iPhone and computer. I'm running Windows 10 on. But are we or are we not supposed to be able to access cross, like I could should be able to access files off my phone on the computer and vice versa?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. It would, you know, the way normal backups work. There's one big repository where everything is, and you can look at them. I don't think iDrive works that way. I think it's per device. But I've never tried it the other way, so I don't know.
Well, the reason I wondered or thought it might be is because Carbonite, which I've used and will be dropping here in July when my subscription is up, because it's just gotten to be a little strange.
Yeah, they've moved away from consumers. They really want to support business now. Yeah,
that one I can access.
Yeah,
computer.
But if you remember, your Carbonite account was per computer.
Yeah, but I could access the files from that were on the computer from the
somewhere else, as long as you sign into your account. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you got me on this one. I am not an iDrive expert. I use it kind of just generically. And I never even thought of trying to see if I could see the files on another device. I think not. And I think that's because that concept is more cloud storage. The idea that you've got one repository for everything, and I think they're really focusing on per-device backup and restore.
Yeah, which that makes sense, and that's perfectly fine. As long as I'm not expecting it, I won't worry
about it. Yeah, and I'll inquire, but my guess is not. And for that, you want something, you know, a cloud storage system. And I do that as in addition to iDrive. That's probably why I never tried it. There's Dropbox, and you can roll your own stuff. I use another service that shall remain nameless because I don't want anybody to know I'm on it.
Yeah.
Only because I don't want people attacking my account trying to get my stuff.
Sure.
But I'll say the name pcloud.com. I really like that. There's some features of that, including encrypted files. But the whole idea there is, I have a documents folder there that all my systems share, including my phones and everything. And they all back up to, they all sync to. It's not, and the reason, I think this is why iDrive doesn't do that. There is the risk that a phone could change a file, and then it could be changed everywhere, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
So I bet you that's one of the reasons they would not do that. That's something, a risk I live with pCloud is, my documents I want my documents folder to be identical everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And so as a result, I back up and sync on every machine to that documents folder. So if I change something on one machine, it's changed everywhere. That may not be the behavior you want for backup. That's a different kind of behavior.
Okay, something else real quick. You were talking about voter stuff the last couple of weeks. If we can have software on our phones and go to automatic teller machines and transfer money as much as people do and as much as banks transfer stuff, how can we not come up with a voter system that would be safe and usable?
Yeah. Yeah, although there have been mistakes made with bank accounts and ATMs.
Oh, sure.
They stand behind it. I mean, if it's a small percentage, we could probably tolerate the same kind of things. I think the main reason, the main concern, and again, this is something we've talked about before, and I've heard from a lot of security experts who say, heaven forfend online voting. The main concern is this lack of a paper trail. It seems like it would be solvable, doesn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. Ironic, iDrive is down right now. I'm sure they'll get it back up. Because I wanted to check for you. There is a the FAQ, there is a page on it, but I can't get to it, talking about this issue of sharing data.
Well, I can look that up. Yeah. Just, I haven't played with a lot because I do still have...
It'd be my guess that this is a conscious decision to keep people from accidentally modifying the backup, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Total sense.
Yeah.
But, on that voting thing, and I totally agree with you about the paper trail. Or there should be some way.
Well, and interestingly, with an ATM, you do have a paper trail.
Yeah, well, you could do that too.
But you can't though with online voting. If I'm doing it on my phone, what's the paper? I guess I could print it out. Yeah, send me an email
or something. It's just I know that there are mistakes and, like you say, losses on bank transactions and stuff too, but it can't be too big or they wouldn't continue to do it.
Right. I agree. And even if there were a small percentage of error in voting, there's so many people using it. That's a really good question. There, if you're really concerned, there are a lot of great resources on online voting or just voting security. I've done a number of interviews with these guys. It's really a fascinating topic, and there's some very serious computer scientists and crypto guys working on this whole idea. What was the name of the site? There was a site. If I could remember the name, that it was a nonpartisan site, not specifically about election interference and things like that, but just on the technology of voting that was quite good. And I just don't remember off the top of my head. If I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes for you.
Great. The machines that we use at polling places are horrible.
That's the problem. Right now we have we're the worst of both worlds. And I think if your goal is to get as many people to vote as possible, making it easy to do on a phone, especially to get these young people who really don't vote, get them to vote, would be really a worthwhile project. So it's worth looking at.
I was out in San Rafael last June, and I was hoping to get up to see it.
Oh, I'm sorry you didn't.
But I was getting a new guide dog, and it just got.
We get visitors who get their guide dogs in San Rafael, and then come here with them. And I love that. I love to meet the dogs and their owners. It's really fun. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Next time, you happy? That's nice.
She's my third, and from there, and they're wonderful.
Oh, they do such a great job. It's so neat.
They're unfortunately not able to train anybody right now because of all this.
No.
So they got people backed up. But
you forget, it's so easy to forget all of the little things that no longer work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're all in our little bubbles now, even more than ever.
Yep.
It's really an interesting time we're in. I hope we can get out of it and have great stories to tell our grandkids.
And meanwhile, back to the cruise ships.
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Love it.
See you next time you're out here. Thanks, Paul.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, man. Lady Laura, you're playing the best stuff. And I have to apologize because I was digging Walking the Dinosaur with Was Not Was, and I didn't even know at the time that Sweet Pea, Hillard Sweet Pea Atkinson, the vocalist of Was Not Was, the guy singing Boom Jackalackalacka Boom, had passed away this week as well at the age of 74. So we're mourning two greats, Little Richard and Sweet Pea Atkinson. Is this singer dead? Anything you want to tell me? Okay, good. All right, just checking. I don't know, but just checking, because Lady Laura, she'll sneak those in, She will. there is a site we were talking about online voting, and I don't want to just be a robot and parrot what I've heard, but I've talked to a lot of security professionals and experts, and universally they say, yes, it's a great idea to make it as easy for people to vote, especially young people who just aren't getting to the polls. And online voting by phone seems like such a great idea. But I've never talked to one security expert who says, but it doesn't. You can't. It's not safe. It's insecure. It's a bad idea. There are people trying to figure this out, though. And I had mentioned to our caller last that I would find a site for him. It's a site about voting and voting technology called verifiedvoting.org. verifiedvoting.org, and they have a lot of resources online there about the voting equipment we use, and of course that's county by county, state by state. There's no national system, even for national elections. And information, though, about internet voting. They have an entire page on internet voting and some of the proposals, because there are a lot, people are working on this. They want to solve it. And I would hope it's solvable, but this fundamental issue, and I'll quote from verifiedvoting.org, there's no way to guarantee that the security, privacy, and transparency requirements for elections can all be met with any practical technology in the foreseeable future. It's just too easy to remotely attack an online election, to modify or filter ballots in a way that is undetectable and, even worse, uncorrectable. Or even just disrupting the election with a DDoS attack and creating havoc. So as much as I think many of us like the idea, I mean, we do everything else online, right? And as Paul pointed out, we get money from banks online all the time. But it's so important that, you know, our elections be trustworthy and that they be seen as trustworthy. Very important for the legitimacy of any election that people can say, no, no, we have a system that works and it can't be easily hacked, modified, or disrupted. That's really important. So this is a challenge. Not that we haven't had technology challenges before that we've triumphed over. We've overcome. And as I remember, I think the best site for this is verifiedvoting.org if you want to read more. We've had a couple of people now talking about this, so I just wanted to pass that along to you. This is a great site just to find out about the systems we are using, and frankly, many of them are worse. They're terrible. And maybe a chance for us to do better on that. Ron in Charlotte, North Carolina is next. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing good, still under quarantine. So,
as we all are, even when they lift it, which I know that in some states they're doing, who wants to be the guinea pig? Not me. Not me. Although I need a haircut badly, as people have observed.
Yeah, I was talking to a buddy of mine and observing you online, and I said, yeah, Leo needs a little trim here.
A little shaggy. So. I'm really tempted. I bet you Flobee sales are through the roof right now.
They are, and I will say that I do have my Twit mask on order. I'm just waiting.
Oh, good. Yeah, we thought it was kind of fun. We offer merchandise for a podcast network, twit.tv/store, and the company that does the merch said, hey, we have masks. So, yeah, I've ordered a bunch of them. I'm going to wear my Twit mask with pride. I think masks might become a fashion statement.
Right? Yeah, it will be.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Ron.
The reason the call was, and I think I found it while I was waiting, but I got an Android S8 active or whatever, but when I take a selfie and the picture comes out, it's mirrored, you know, it's flip wrong.
Oh, it drives me crazy.
And I think the chat room gave me I found the option. I think I got it.
It's in the camera settings. You can flip it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was just curious, are there any other recommendations for better camera software other than what comes on?
No, if you're using the Google now, I don't know what phone do you have.
It's a Samsung. It's a
okay.
S8 active.
So here's the issue. Samsung makes a camera app. That's the one you're using. That's the default that takes advantage of features that they've built into the hardware. Is it the best camera app? Maybe not. It's the best one if you want to take advantages of the features they built into the hardware. But Google's camera, Gcam, can also be downloaded. Sometimes you have to jump through some hoops. So there are other camera apps you can use, including Google's own GCam software. Now, that's not available on the Android store. You'll have to kind of do some tricks to get that on there. Or maybe it is. Maybe it is, actually. I would check the Google camera. Check and see. Okay. Samsung may block that. If so, there are ways to get it on there. The thing is, it's just a generic camera. It doesn't understand all the features of your Samsung. So the Samsung camera is going to be able to do more of the things that the Samsung built in. The GCam software, though, you may be better because it uses Google's artificial intelligence to improve the picture. I often have multiple camera apps on my phone. Because, you know, there's some that are designed for time lapse. There's some that are designed for selfies. There's actually something called Selfissimo that Google released some time ago that does selfies like the black and white photo booth pictures, which are fun. So there's lots of choices out there. You don't have to stick with the one built into your phone. It's, though, the one that's going to understand your phone hardware the best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the man who saved the match game. Shame. No shame in that. Dick T. Bartolo, he's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He saved the match game when Mark Goodson and Bill Timer were about to cancel the show. He said, let me write the questions. And how many years did you do that?
About 7 or 8.
Man.
More than 40,000 questions.
You invented Dumb Dora.
You know, it was name an apple, name a green fruit, name a president on money.
And it fit your style so well because you work clean, but there's something, you love innuendo. You love plays on words. And man, you know, you would write the jokes. Richard Dawson would just go crazy. It was so much fun. I just loved show.
Well, it's still running. I can't believe it.
Yeah, on the Game Show Network and stuff.
On the Game Show Network.
Had some fun. We do these, our podcast network, we're all going a little crazy. So we're doing these kind of after hours streams. And we did one last night. And Dick very kindly decided to do the Not the Match game with some of our hosts. It was so much fun. You are great. And you wrote really fun questions. And Lisa and I are playing along at home and we're yelling our answers. You know, what did he do in the torpedo tube? He did a podcast, you know, things like that.
Oh, that's very funny. It's a very funny modern answer.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we weren't playing. Next time I'm playing. That's all I have to say.
Oh, okay, about it. Very good. Yeah, give me a shout. I'll host it again anytime.
It's one of those things where people who grew up watching it, Christina Warren, who's now at Microsoft, was one of our players last night. This is like her dream.
She emailed me and said, that was an honor being on that show. That was so kind of him.
We were honored too. So Dick joins us. He's also, Match Game Mad Magazine, but maybe better known around here as our Gizmo Wizard, the guy who comes up with the great gadgets. What do you have for us?
Yeah, Leo, I have a very interesting idea for a lock. Actually, the company calls them security ties. And what this is for is you're out on your bike and you decide, I'm going to run into Starbucks and grab a coffee. And you go, should I chance leaving the bike or should I get out the padlock and the chain? So this is a real quickie way to lock your bike. It kind of looks like a tie wrap, except it has a flexible steel core so that you can lock the wheel to the frame so that it can't roll away. And this is not for locking your bike up overnight in New York City. This is for leaving your bike for 20 minutes. I thought a great use for this is at the airport where you can see your luggage. You want to go buy a magazine.
Oh, yeah.
You lock your suitcase to the bench so that someone can't just run through, get the bag, and run on. If they want to do this, they have to stop and get out a pliers or a saw to hack through it.
Yeah, you just want a speed bump.
Yeah, exactly. So they make two versions. The one of them is called the Hip-Lock Z-Lock Combo, which has a little combination. The other one, the jury's out on this. This one is lighter weight, much cheaper. It has a little key, and the key is like has two little points that unlock the lock. The problem is once you have the key, it unlocks all the Ziplocs.
Oh, there's one key. It's like the TSA key. It unlocks everything. Oh.
It locks them all. So you have to wish you're the only person in your neighborhood who has this one.
I like having a bike lock with a key, though, because I don't want to have to remember a combination. The key just seems like an easier way to do it.
Oh, okay.
But this is it's the same key for everybody. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's really, again, it's like, you know, do you ever watch a Western?
Yeah.
And they get they ride up, you know, right into town. They're all dusty. They want to go in the bar, have a shot of red eye. They tie their horse up. All they ever do is just kind of loop it around a thing. Yes. I think you need a bike lock, dude. You got to lock your horse up.
A horse lock.
You can't just throw the rope around a wooden beam and expect it. What I mean, did they have a horse thief problem, or did they maybe it was just that's why they treated horse thieves pretty badly, I guess. So we do have a bicycle stealing problem, but I think if you give it just a little bit of a disincentive,
yeah,
they'll just go to the next bike that's not locked up at all.
Yeah, there you go. And so the combo one is $25, but I saw it on Amazon for $20. And the little guy that uses the same key for every lock is like $12.
You know, enough so you might have, you know, a couple of them just lying around. Hip lock, H-I-P-L-O-K, Z-locks, L-O-K-S. Now, the easiest way to find this is to go to Dick's site, gizwiz.biz, and then there's a button there that says, you know, the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, and a little kind of strange picture of me. You click that, and everything he's ever mentioned on the show, by the way, is on this. So it's a really a nice compendium. There's other things at the website, though, I want to bring your attention to. First of all, Dick appears on World News Now on ABC every month, and so you can see the gadgets he showed there. There's also the What the Heck Is It contest, brand new contest. Began early May. If you can identify that close-up picture of a lawn sprinkler, you're in.
No.
I gave it away
right on the first guess.
Obviously it's not. You just go there, and there are 6 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer and 12 for the best cute wrong answer, and the judge's decisions are final, etc. All the rules are at gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. I like it's fun. Dick likes playing the games. Is there any match game stuff on the site too?
There is some match game stuff. I have some original questions for sale,
like the cards that Gene Rayburn actually was reading.
Yeah, the actual cards.
Oh my goodness!
The actual cards from the beginning, as Gene's vision got worse, the cards got bigger, and we had to get bigger type. We called IBM and said, "What's the biggest type you have?"
Did they use one of those Selectrics, and you had a big one of the typeface balls?
They said, "Well, we have an all capital Selectric."
Oh,
and we said, "That's fine. The cards can be in all caps."
Yeah. I love this. So, and these are autographed by you. That would be fun to have an original match game question. Anyway, gizwiz.biz, help keep Dick in the diet root beer and pretzels. That's about all you can get with these. Gizwiz.biz. Don't forget to play the What the Heck Is It contest. And Dick, we will see you back here next week.
Very good. I'll be here.
Actually, bye. I should mention after the radio show, Dick does more match game stuff and other things. We call it the Giz Fizz. It's a little, is it just live only? You just have to watch. You have to be here for it of a Saturday.
Well, you have to be in your home, safely in your home.
Safely in your home, not here. Your home.
Yeah.
Not here in the studio, although we have had live studio audiences in years.
It ends up on YouTube, thanks to BeatNest.
Okay, good. So you can watch that a little later on.
Perfect.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
See you next week. Well, the time has come. The old clock on the wall is telling me it's time to wrap this thing up. I want to thank Lady Laura, our musical director, for memorializing the great Little Richard and Sweet Pea. Playing some great music today. Thank you, Lady Laura. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel, for getting you ready for your appearance on national radio. Most of all, I want to thank all of you. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you. Stay safe. Stay well. And I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a safe Geek Week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.